welcome to another edition of the Renegades podcast. Have you ever felt trapped or locked in your own business? Dave Dean and Steve Matthews sit and talk about all things business and the Renegade path. So settle in and enjoy this edition of the Renegade podcast and free yourself from the prison of your business.
Welcome to another podcast. How are you, Dave?
I am great, Steve. How are you today?
Well, good. And nice to see, actually, we've got some Fandango technology in front of me today.
Yes.
Whereas normally we have a normal boring microphone. You rang me last night and said you were bringing the Yeti. I thought there's no way to talk about Michelle like that. Terrible thing to do.
If Michelle thought I'd said that, my friend, I would not be here myself.
Just because she got bigger feet than normal. There's no need to call her that.
Yes, the Yeti. It's the
phallic symbol of Mike. Yeah.
So everybody should be hearing us in full-on Dolby surround sound. What an awful thought, Dave. Those poor people listen to us in the car or in the gym, listening to us in our stupid Welsh accents.
As sad as they are listening to us, yes. No. This is quality, Steve. This is an improvement. You know, those incremental gains we talk about.
Always moving forward. So before we go on, because obviously I want to talk about a couple of things today, systems being one, but just back from San Francisco.
Yeah.
How was San Fran?
San Francisco's a great town. I think I would welcome an opportunity to spend a lot more time there. And maybe that'll happen at some point. Right now, of course, we've got other things that we need to focus on in the UK, but what a great town. Great city. I go to London quite often for my job, but I would never ever choose to live there. San Francisco, different kettle of fish. I think I would really, really enjoy living there for a spell.
We've just been talking about singing. Maybe we should blast out a couple of bars if you're going to San Francisco. No, should we not bother?
I think that could really put people off, Steve. Yeah.
It must be quite surreal to be walking around mine with all the headquarters of all those, you know, the companies that we use, Airbnb, Uber.
It is a freaky situation because I found myself walking through the town at one point and ended up outside the LinkedIn headquarters building. And of course, not far from that is Salesforce headquarters, which is now the tallest building on the West Coast, 67 floors. Very ominous building. When you're outside of the city looking in, you know, it's this huge tower. Stands out very, very well, but it is surreal to recognize, you know, when we're back home and we're using all of these software packages that we now tend to use almost on a daily basis. Yeah. You've got your Facebooks, your Googles, your LinkedIns, Airtable, which is a really good online spreadsheet stroke database software package. And as you say, Uber's headquarters is in the town as well. It is kind of surreal that you're in the middle of all of those things that you are exposed to every day, and here's where they are in terms of their
all
businesses.
All in one place. It's amazing, you know.
All in the city centre, and surprisingly, the financial and union districts of San Francisco and the North Beach area are. It's actually quite a small area. You could walk around the majority of the San Francisco Peninsula without too much hassle. Mind you, in the rain, first thing you want to do is open up your phone and call Uber or Lyft and get an app.
Rain? I'm not subscribed to
it
that.
It can be torrential.
Is it?
Not every day, not all the time, but when the rain kicks in, it can be a real pain. Yeah. So we ended up, in fact, young lady, we got an Uber from a restaurant that was just a block and a half from where we were staying, but neither Michelle or I had taken a coat. Right. It belted down, and so I called a taxi, and this lady picked us up. She said, "Where are you going?" And she asked us to confirm because she thought I might have put the address in wrong. And as she took off, after I reminded her of where we were going, she said, "Well, you've got the award for being the shortest ever journey I've done."
Oh, good.
It was When I say one block
Welsh,
and a half,
the
right?
Welsh used to have something like that.
What a wimp! What a wimp! I said, listen, all I had on was like a t-shirt and a very, very thin sweatshirt, and we were coming back that afternoon. You see, so I had no other way of all the bags were packed, everything was ready to go, and I thought, nah, I'm not going to end up soaking wet for the whole journey back home. So yeah, she thought we were pretty much lunatics, but there you go.
No, good though. So you had a good time, and I know you went on a course for a day as well, not a course or a seminar, I should say.
Well, the trip was good for two reasons, Steve. You know that we went there originally to promote Renegades, and in the hope that we could begin the process of launching our first group in San Francisco. I have to say that we didn't launch the group on the basis of the event itself, but we did open many doors, and we learned a lot of lessons from the process. The biggest takeaway for me is that you have to build an audience, and you know, it's something we've been saying to our audience for a long, long time, but in an effort to perhaps create more speed, the haste, you know what they say, less haste, more speed. Sadly, I injected a little too much haste, and I used techniques that if anyone came into Renegades and asked our advice, I wouldn't be giving them the advice took.
In fairness, Dave, maybe we should talk about that, because I think, you know, it's all well and good saying about, you know, how to do things, but, you know, when things go wrong, what do you do and what do you take out of it? You know, people will probably get a lot more out of that than anything.
Yeah, well, I've got no problem with that. Speaking into it is a very wise thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we all learn lessons, and I think the biggest lesson for me is any customer who've come into businesses that I've been involved in, you know, and you know that one of the companies I have at the moment is WebFiber. Anyone coming to WebFiber and saying I want to increase my sales, then the last thing we would do is advise them to go out to a cold audience. You know, by all means, if you're going to buy a list from a reputable organization, and I'm not saying don't buy a list, but what you don't do is buy a list and email market them straight away, because one, you're contravening GDPR. The General Data Protection Rules now prohibit.
Not quite yet. May it comes in, isn't it? So we're all right for a minute.
But they prohibit the exploitation of lists and marketing to people who've not given you permission to do that.
Yeah.
But of course, you can. There's nothing stopping you, even with the GDPR. Nothing stopping you from selling hard mail. You know, so bulky mail. Or postcards, letters, shock and awe boxes. They're all fine under the GDPR, which I do find bizarre, mind you. But from my point of view, in an effort to speed up the process of bringing people on board in the US, and particularly on the West Coast, I succumbed to buying a list, bringing that information in, and promoting to that list with perhaps an unrealistic expectation of being able to fill a room out of that list, and sadly that was very naive.
Yeah. Well, I think, and before you say anything there now, so I think it's an important lesson for everybody to get, because it taught me a lot, actually. Is because just because you've got a list and you've got a good product, even if the list is strategic, you know, so business owners, and you've got a really good product, that doesn't make any difference whatsoever.
No, not at all.
And so I think there's a step before, there's a step, the initial step, which is probably what we missed in Renegades, was the profile and awareness raising, you know, which some people, it's the grunt work, isn't it? It's the hard work. It's the it's the posting. It's the blog entries. It's the vlogging. It's the Facebook. It's not a campaign. Take that to one side. It's not a campaign. it's just literally giving away a lot of added value information to help people and raising people. So you're building a rapport and trust. So then when you do ask them to join a list or you do campaign to them, that they understand, first of all, what you're all about and who you
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
And I think, whereas before, you may have had TV ads or ads in magazines or a cold call in workforce or whatever it may be, people out there, sales reps out there knocking doors, giving out leaflets, pamphlets, you know, all these kind of things that, you know, in the old, in the olden days, but people still use that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a repetition to it, which now I think if you're going to engage in social media, you have to do the grunt work first. Before then, you raise awareness for a particular product, and then before you campaign to a list. So I think there's a three-stage process now, really.
Yeah, certainly. I think you need to bring people to you.
Yeah.
It's attraction marketing.
Yeah.
And you can do that through some disruption marketing in things like Facebook.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, the whole process was really a lesson in taking your own medicine, really.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point teaching other people to do
no.
things in a particular way.
Good point, yeah.
And then completely
yeah.
doing something contradictory. On the other hand,
yeah.
the whole process of Renegades is that we don't follow the same path as everybody else.
Yeah.
So experimentation is something you have to do. Now, I'm not really proud of the fact that we experimented in something that we knew really wouldn't work.
Yeah. But that's what this.
But you've got to try
what
things.
We're all about, though.
You've got
what
to try.
We're all about. We could sit here, and we could say that you've just come back from San Francisco. What a fantastic thing it was! What a brilliant thing. Yeah, we took so many positives from it. But me and you would be sitting here thinking, actually, you know, it was very frustrating.
Mm.
We didn't practice what we preached. We did something that we knew that wouldn't work, but we did it anyway because we had a little bit of pressure to do something.
Mm.
I think people will respect the fact that that's just what most people would do. We're honest. We're just honest. We're not, and we've always said, we're just normal people.
Yeah.
Normal people trying to get something off the ground. And I just think, just be honest.
Yeah.
Because you know, the fact of the matter is, I bet we won't do it again.
We won't be.
Exactly. So we won't be doing it again.
Yeah, I think there's a very different approach that we'll take next time. But you know, we tried it. We made a commitment to do that thing, and to kick things off in the States.
Yeah.
And the techniques that we used have definitely increased awareness, which is good. And the trip in itself was successful for many other reasons. I mean, we did in fact carry out the event. We did do it. We had just had fewer people there than we expected. And out of that event has come a very good opportunity now in Belgium, which is something we would never have anticipated beforehand. So, you know, you've got to try these things. Yeah, we tried. It failed in terms of its original objective. But it was successful in other ways. And the other, as you mentioned a little earlier, the other real benefit was that we managed to get into another event. I spent a day with the Mentor Box people. Anybody who's been, who is on Facebook at the moment will, I'm sure, will have come across one of the adverts that they put out. Mentor Box is a new product from a guy called Alex Mayer. And his team. Alex is a business partner of Ty Lopez. And Alex is a very, very wealthy individual, having sold his original company. He's an ex-NASA scientist, by the way. Sold his original company for a very handsome sum. The company was an $800 million turnover dating application called Zoosk. And
amazing, $800 million turnover. I never even heard of it.
Yeah, and that company got sold, as I say, for a very handsome sum. Alex went on to invest in a number of other organisations that he's helped start up, and some of those have been sold on again. And he's now the chief exec of Mentor Box, which it's an excellent product, Steve. It's a $7 a month subscription-based model where you get access to video summaries and teleseminars, and it's a good information product. But the upsell is that once you're in at $7 a month, then you're sold an opportunity to buy the actual Mentor Box, a very shoe size style box, very well presented. Open up the box, and inside you're going to get two books, two DVDs, two summaries, two cheat sheets, a couple of other added products. And
the books change all the time, or the same books?
Yeah, no, each month, two different books.
All right,
and
so
the books are summarized.
Every month, yeah.
You get a different box, and you get a choice. You don't subscribe at $200, although you can. You can simply choose to buy one box, miss the next month, buy another box. But what's interesting is that they went from a standing start zero to 20 million run rate in 90 days. So they got the business up to a what would it have been, about 2 million a month within 3 months.
So Ty Lopez and his Lamborghinis, this feeling.
Yeah, yeah. So they've got it right. And it was great. It was a pleasure to spend a day with them at their offices in San Francisco with their team, the technical team. Alex himself was there. His COO, Jonathan, was also there. It was very interesting to hear their journey, how they met, how Jonathan became the CEO, and they've now launched another company alongside that called Social Marketing Science. So it's that's a very interesting business where they have a theory that there's a science behind social media marketing. And they do it very well. And clearly, MentorBox is as successful as it is because they know what they're doing. So that was interesting to hear how they approach social marketing. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that you'll be seeing that company growing significantly as well.
It's interesting actually going on social media marketing now. I mean, we were talking a little bit before about Andy and Gavin, you know, two of the faculty guys. And Gavin is, in my view, a bloody genius on Facebook, you know. And how he's moved Andy's street food cafe from 20 likes to 1,000 likes in 2 days.
Mm.
And how the whole community are now talking about it. And how the interaction on the actual page in Facebook, well, Andy Stace will tell you, it's like 20 times what it was before. He'll probably tell you it's more like 100 times. He's actually got people interacting about the food and the pictures and
yeah,
and the offers that are on, and you should go here, and this is great, and the reviews he's getting on the but from nothing in 2 days. So if you get it right and you know what you're doing, it's interesting how you can have a massive effect.
Absolutely, yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how that translates into sales, because I know that Andy at one point was wondering whether or not this is something that was, you know, taking up more of his time than he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But it's if they can turn that around,
yeah,
just by changing the way they market,
yeah,
then that's again further proof of the power of social media marketing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I know, like, I can say one thing from that is I know that Andy, after they put the first campaign out, he ran out of burgers in 3 days. So, you know, he'd gone from small sales to literally running out and going, we needed to do a run for, because obviously Gavin supplies the burgers as well, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So he had to do a run to get more burgers because they're obviously interest. They've gone from selling hardly anything to selling loads. And, another part of the process which I'm keen to talk, you know, not talk about, but just mention is, that's the connection that we have in the mastermind group and the Renegades. In the fact of Andy came up with a problem, we all talked into the problem, Gav had a solution.
Yeah.
And they both liaised with and to get it working. There was no charge involved. It was just literally, you know, I guess tapping into the knowledge that other people had in the group,
mm.
which is what we're, you
exactly
know, what we're keen to promote.
That's what Renegades is all about, isn't it? We talk about the fact that you have to surround yourself with like-minded, successful, focused people. You know, your inner circle needs to be the kind of person that understands the problems and the challenges you face and can help you get to the solutions you need.
Yeah.
That's why we launched Renegades. It's the purpose. It's the way that we'll continue to grow the business.
Yeah.
You know, we want business owners all over the UK, all over the world, to grow their business independently of themselves.
Yeah.
And we don't have all the answers. If we did have all the answers, then we'd all be millionaires sitting on a beach somewhere.
It was nice last night. Obviously, we'll be here on a Saturday morning. You know, that's how committed we are to it. But I was there last night, Friday evening. And, you know, James has got a massive amount of experience in finance, setting up microbanks in Indonesia, 8 years on Wall Street. But he's always employed people previously with under bank terms, you know, contracts and terms and conditions for a larger organization. Now that he's obviously working for himself and having to put those contracts and salaries and bonus into place,
yep.
He asked us a question on our WhatsApp group last night, and it didn't stop. It was literally from 7 o'clock until 11 o'clock last night.
It was,
but everybody's wading in with a, you know, with some advice and with some help. And I think that's...
I think I saw about 40 different posts on that, yeah. on that particular subject.
Do you know what, Dave? I went to see a customer of mine. I've been dealing with this particular gentleman for probably 10 years. And he's always worked on his own. He worked with his father before, and his father obviously passed away and he took the business on. But he said, I work on my own. And he said, I've got none of that community at all. None of it.
Yeah.
I got no one to ask. He said, so if I've got an issue, I've got to stew it out in my head. And I've got nowhere to go to get that advice. You know, I can't ring my bank manager for it because they haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. My accountant wouldn't have an understanding of it.
Yeah.
But he said, in my community of people that I associate with, he's a big churchgoer. He coaches a football team for his son. He said, but in my community of people that I deal with, my wife and that community, no one can help me. No one. And I know it sounds really stupid, and I'm not doing it to blow my own trumpet. He said, this conversation is worth like £1 million to me. He said, because some of the issues that he kept coming up with, well, what about if I was doing this? And I said, well, have you tried that? No. but it's not because I was coming up with sort of gems of wisdom. It's just he hadn't had a chance to talk anything through with anybody.
Yeah, exactly, and it's amazing how you can see solutions to your problem in an industry that you would never have imagined.
Yeah.
Well, as we've seen, you know, there's in just in the small group that we have, pizza oven manufacturer, roofing, butcher, lawyer, financier.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Serial idiot.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to see that in all of those different industries, solutions just appear.
Yeah.
And you'd think that something that works in retail could have a similar positive effect in roofing.
Yeah. No, that's interesting actually, which probably leads us on to, you know, probably what we're going to talk about today, which is systems. You kind of, you know, the whole reason for Renegades really is to try and allow people to have the freedom they want, to live the life that they deserve, and have the success that they want, you know. And systems is a big part of that, isn't it? You can't, and I put a post on my Facebook page and the blog last week about, I went to see another customer of mine, a client of mine. And got a very successful business, turning over in excess of 6 million. And he said to me, Steve, this business is killing me. And he said, literally, it will be the death of me. He said, and he wasn't exaggerating, this is his words, not mine. He said, from the inside out, this business is killing me. He said, I cannot take any time away from it. And he said, which I found staggering, because every time I tried to ring him, I was returning a call, I was. And every time I was trying to ring him, his phone goes straight to answer phone. His mobile goes straight to answer phone. And I said to him, there's something wrong with your mobile. Because actually, I supply his mobiles. So I said to him, there's something wrong with your mobile. He said, no, he said, I'm always on it. I said, you can't be always on it. He said, Steve, yesterday and every day, he said, I take between 150 and 270 calls a day between 6:30 and 8:30 in the night. 6:30 in the morning to 8:30 in the night. He said, I cannot literally, and he was quite envious of me in the fact that I had built a business and managed to move away from him because I'd built a team of people that could run it when I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And he said, I will not hide my envy and anger that you're able to do that. And you know, he was quite, I wouldn't say bitter, but you know what I mean? He wasn't bitter in a nasty way, but he was bitter towards himself
that he couldn't
do that. And he had no succession in place. Systems, processes, no succession, no management team. And he was really down, you know, really down. And it's funny, actually, because having a business like that has given him all the trappings. You know, turning over more than 6 million, you're obviously going to be doing quite well for yourself. Not massive, huge net profit margins, but always decent, you know, always making a profit. But a lot of money coming into the business. So he's got all the trappings of everything that you would perceive to have a successful business. A lot of guys working in a lot of vans on the road, you know, decent offices. He's managed to purchase houses for his children. He's got 3 kids. They've all got their own houses now, which are purchased. I'm going to know that. He's got his own. He does a little bit of property stuff, nice cars, and he's got a fantastic property on the Med. Can't go there. Can't go. So his ultimate goal was to take a backseat in the business. Still draw. Take-ins from the business, drawing earnings from it, but to spend most of his time in the property in the Med in Spain that they brought. Can't do it. Tried to do it last year, tried to go out there for, I think it was something like 6 weeks last year, just see how we went. Was back into business, just literally implodes when he's not there. Because, and he'll say, the team that he's got there are just incapable of doing it.
Mm. But he's not seeing that. This is entirely his fault.
That's where the bitterness comes in.
Yeah.
You know, he said the things I'm trying to do, because the reason I'm talking about that is, the systems. He said the things I'm trying to put in place now, I should have done 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it. When I had all my, he said, I think this gentleman in question is about 56. You know, and he's just approaching that time in life where he wants to sort of slow down.
Yeah.
And, as a client of mine, I was saying, we probably need to put all these in place and manage it for 2 years and give it full 2 years. And he's like, I don't know whether I got it, 2 years in me. Don't know whether I can give it that 2 years, because I just don't know whether he said, I've done it for 20. I don't know whether I've got the energy to do it for another 2 years.
That's a terrible, terrible position to be in.
Awful position. Lovely guy as well. A lot of time for him. And awful thing to see, but... Talk about a prisoner, an absolute prisoner. And I said, he knows that, because we talk about that a lot. He knows that, and he's trying to put things in place. The systems that he's trying to put in place now. It's not just about the systems, it's about the people as well. Absolutely. I'm trying to manage those systems.
Yes.
And, but that's why it should be everybody's goal. Because, whether we like it or not, there's a lot of people in that same situation, isn't it?
I think every business in that situation, every business owner is in that situation. I was at a funeral yesterday, as you know, and a family member, I was sitting and talking with a family member, and not during the funeral itself, because he had the phone off, right? But in the wake afterwards, his phone went off probably every 5 minutes. Throughout the entire time. And it was funny because his ringtone was his daughter whistling and saying, taxi, taxi. So every 2 minutes, every couple of minutes, I would say, there was this, taxi, taxi. and And it was his it was his daughter's ringtone. It wasn't his daughter ringing, it was his staff, right? So he runs a business, groundworks, tarmacking, driveway, paving, all sorts of construction elements. He's got a number of vehicles on the road, but he drives one of the vehicles as well. And so when he's not there, and of course he was at the funeral with us, his staff, not only do his staff, they're unsure of what needs to be done next, but they're also nervous of getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Now, why that is, and whether there's a culture issue in there, whether there's a blame structure, who knows, right? But what he was saying, and I asked him when was his next holiday, and he said, I'll be really honest with you, Dave, I think it's in May, but I'm not sure, because his wife, who was sat next to him, she organises it all. And and he said to her at one point, there was a holiday quite recently where he was so oblivious to what was going on around him other than the business. He took a phone call while he was laying on the sunbed.
Yeah.
And the guy said to him, "Where are you?" And he had to turn to his wife to say, "Where are we?" He was on holiday, he'd got on the plane, he'd got there, he'd got onto the bus to the resort, he was laying there on the sunbed and had no idea where he was.
Yeah.
Now, that is just...
Yeah. If it had been me, it's something to do with the alcohol.
That's just a crazy situation. Don't get me wrong, I'm not judging the guy. I mean, you know,
No, that's right.
I, for heaven's sake, the mistakes that I make on a daily basis... it's the thing is, we make mistakes because we make so many decisions as a business owner, and maybe two out of every decision, every 10 decisions we make, will turn out to be the right thing. But we just keep on making decisions anyway. We keep on moving forward, right? It's a percentage game, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I am never in a position to judge others. But it was crazy to listen, and I was thanking God, and not that I'm a religious person, but I was thanking God that I'm not in that same position. I have been, not quite that bad that I didn't know where we were, but I've certainly been in a situation where I've got to continuously take phone calls, and the whole business revolved around me. Thankfully, that's not the case anymore. Although I do still get involved in the businesses, it's nowhere near to the level that I used to be. But we have to get to that point. We have to encourage. That's what Renegades is about. We are trying to help people remove themselves from the shackles of being a prisoner to your business. And certainly the gentleman I was speaking to yesterday was a long way away. Now, he too, by the way, has all those trappings, you know. He and his wife both have very, very nice cars. The house they've built, literally built from scratch, I understand, has probably got a value on it now of about 1.3, 1.4 million.
Yeah.
It is a stunning house.
Yeah.
But what good is it if the life you have is so restrictive that you don't even know where you are when you're on holiday?
Isn't that funny though, Dave, that everybody would look at your friend and mine, you know, friend, business colleague, whatever you want to call it, you know, customer, client, and think, got everything.
Yeah.
Got everything. What have they got to be grumpy about or miserable about?
Yeah.
And in reality, you know, it's come at a huge cost.
Mm.
You know, and I wrote the piece based around health and well-being. You know, there's lots of reasons why you should obviously look to remove yourself from your business. There's lots of reasons, but one of them is health and well-being. You know, I look at my client, and he said, "This is killing me." It's a sad reflection, really, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And you know, because we talk about systems. You know, you've got to have them in place. You know, so you know, my question to you would be, you know, when do you start putting those systems in? When? Because I guess with the benefit of hindsight, I know you're going to say day one, but with the benefit of hindsight, we can say that. But I know I didn't, and you didn't put him in from day one, because when you're on your own, you just your ultimate driving, I guess your driving force when you start a business is, I need to get money in, I need to pay the bills, I need to prove that this works. So you'll just do everything. So when do you start, and what do you start with?
Well, so the first thing I would say to that is, you're absolutely right, when do you start? Day one. The biggest problem is that people say, yeah, but there's only two of us. What's the point of writing a system when there's only two of us? Well, that is exactly the reason why you have to write the system, because you know, if you have any form of ambition, then you're going to want 3, 4, 5, 10, 50, 100 people. And if you don't have a system in the beginning, then every time you onboard somebody from that point on, you spend far more time than is necessary to show them what to do, and then stand behind them and watch them, and you just tie yourself up in knots. And then when you get to a point of critical mass where you don't have the time to stand behind people and show them what to do. So getting systems in place very, very early on is vital. You're right, Steve, I didn't do that in my first couple of businesses. What I would say, though, is having learned from what I did then, take Renegades, for example. You know, Michelle and I worked the first month, 6 weeks, was spent going through all of the things that we had to do and writing a manual for it. And in our drive now, in our shared drive, we've got an operational folder within which we have operations manuals. And yet Renegades is still, in terms of its internal staff, is still only three people. So we've built those systems because we know that as we grow, then we want those systems to be scalable. We want to be able to bring other people in and simply say, here's access to the folder, follow these processes. And now what we do recognize, though, is that those systems will probably evolve and change in time.
Yeah.
The issue here is whether you have any system at all. You know, you should build those systems in a way that they can be as clear as they need to be to help somebody do the job that needs to be done.
Yeah.
But also they need to be flexible enough to change as time changes, as...
Yeah.
You know, 6 months go by and software you use changes.
Right.
You know, if you write a system for Google, for example, all right, write a process for how you would use Google for a particular thing, Google themselves are not going to be waiting for Dave Dean. They're going to say, well, we'll change our processes as we see fit. That simply means that I've got to change a process.
I think you're right, though. You know, in reality, for anybody listening, when they say, when do you start? I would say, you know, and we all said, if with the benefit of hindsight, day one. So start today.
Exactly.
Start today.
So the answer.
Start now.
The answer to anyone asking the question, when do you start?
Yeah,
now.
Now. Yeah. And I'm going to go back to what you said about the two people in. Okay, so there's only two of us. Why do we need a system? Well, okay, so it's just me and Dave Dean sitting in this room today. So if we're doing our thing, if Dave Dean goes on holiday, how do I know what Dave Dean does? How do I know how to do, even if Dave Dean is responsible for packing boxes and sending, shipping them out, if I don't know how to print the labels, what font to use, what stickers to put on, what boxes to put on for certain products, where to tape them, how to tape them, you know, how to take them to the post office, what to weigh, what the prices are. If I don't do that, then when Dave goes away for 2 weeks,
nothing gets sent out.
Torremolinos. in his budgie smugglers.
There's a picture
and
you
I do not want
to see.
Yeah, but there'll be nothing sent out for 2 weeks.
No.
So that's why I need a system.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go on holidays, because I'm responsible for all the sales or answer the phones, if I don't tell Dave how to answer the phones, what to say, where to log it, where to put it, then nothing gets answered for 2 weeks. So the business stops for 2 weeks. So you might as well both go on holidays.
Yeah.
In reality. You might as well just close the doors and just not bother for 2 weeks and come back.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, do it now, do it today, and just start.
Absolutely.
So yeah. if anybody's starting, because I know another a great one is, I haven't got time to write a system. I haven't got time to write a book. So if you're going to start today, are we, you know, because I'm a firm believer in, you know, like X-Forces boy. Yeah, I was with Jay yesterday, X-Forces boy. And they also say, monkey see, monkey do. Yeah, so, but they would have a process for everything, for literally everything.
Yeah.
So I've kind of mirrored that in my business, or did mirror it in my business, what I'd have a process for answering the phone.
Yeah.
Because I used to find that people used to come in and answer the phone in a certain way, and I'd go, who's he talking to? What's he answering the phone like that for? But I hadn't even told him how to answer the phone. How can I complain about somebody answering the phone wrong if I haven't told him the right way?
Yeah.
I can only complain to someone answering the phone wrong if I've showed him the right way. Or actually, again, 10 years of coaching my under 16 team. Now, so I started with under 7. And when you're taught on coaching courses, they tell you tell, show, do. So tell them what to do, show them what to do, and let them do it while you're watching them. So right from that process, you know, the system is all about telling someone how to do a certain thing in a certain way, because that's the way you want it done. But as you said, the flexibility of it is the person being able to feedback, say, actually, do you know what? I think if we tweak that number 8 to actually say this, I think it would be better. Okay, then you rewrite the process and change it to version 2.
I think there's something else that really important here. Is that we spoke, the two examples we've given there are in a business, say, of just 2 people, right? But let's say that you're a year into your business and you've now got 10 staff.
Yeah.
And you didn't have the knowledge in the beginning that you need to write systems. Now you do. The question is, when do I do it? Answer is now. But then the time issue is, lots of people will say, but I just don't have the time. I'm busy, I work 12 hours a day. Let's take that from a slightly different viewpoint. Reframe the situation and ask yourself the question, who needs to write them down? Who needs to be the person writing these systems? And more often than not, it's not you.
Absolutely, never should be you. Should be the person who's actually doing it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Because you can have the ultimate say, can't you? As a business owner, you can say, I need you to write a process for me for answering the telephone. Bring it to me and we sign it off. So when you bring it in, so you haven't done anything. So when the person brings it in and says, oh, this is my process, you say, well, actually, I don't want you to say good morning. I want you to say howdy. Or I want you to say yippee-yi-yay or something like that. Yeah. You can change it because you have the ultimate say because you're the owner of the business.
Yeah.
So, you know, your time is better off doing something else. Well, the person that's actually doing the job is writing the process for doing the manual for you.
Yeah.
And we're big advocates of that because we talk about that all the time, don't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be them. You know, they, and in fact, if you've got more than one person doing the job, you should get all of the people doing the job contributing to the manual, because what you'll find is that not everyone does the process in the same way to begin with, and some people will have a better technique. So get them to collaborate to write the manual, then get everybody to buy into the final iteration of that manual, and you'll find that the team will become more efficient anyway.
Yeah.
And there's another word that worries me, to be honest, efficiency, because you can be incredibly efficient at the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So efficiency and effectiveness are two words that shouldn't be confused, and what we need to be really is effective. And but if we can be efficient and effective, brilliant. But there's no point in being efficient at something and getting it done in a fraction of the time, but it's the wrong thing to focus on. So that's something I would I'd be very careful to stress. But for me, Steve, you know, I'm always reminded when I think about systems, I always go back to the E-Myth, right? You know, Michael Gerber's book, was so powerful for me in those early days for many, many reasons. But I loved the whole section on innovation, quantification, and orchestration. You know, he talked about building your business as if it was a perfect franchising prototype. Looking at your business from every single aspect. In fact, I took one piece of advice. He talked about having a process for showing people around your business. Because he would get, the more successful, the more productive you become as a company, people will undoubtedly want to come and see how you do it. So he said, we wrote a process for it. And I thought, what a great idea. So I wrote a process in our print business for how we would not only greet people on the telephone, but how we would greet them physically when they came to the building, and then how we would show them around. And it was interesting. I went back. We did an acquisition about 3-4 weeks ago, and the people we were buying from, we were buying their part of their business. We brought them up to the print operation in Ferndale, and I said to Tom, who's now the MD, you show the guys around. And it was great because he got up out of the chair and he said, right then, guys, if you follow me, we've got a process for this. So let's start over in Unit 8 and I'll take you around the whole flow of the business. And I thought, thank God for that. I used to do that. I didn't realize the guys had continued to adopt the same method. But it was great to see. And I think when the guys came back into the meeting room after having the tour, they were really, really impressed. And they were really impressed with the way it had been done. So for me, that speaks volumes. And it helped to ease the negotiations we were going through and made the transition much easier. So for me, Gerber's innovation, quantification, and orchestration process is a vital part to anyone's development of systems within their business. Yeah. And I would urge people to read that section of the E-Myth.
Because when we talk about systems, we talk systems and processes go hand in hand. It's the same thing as the systems and processes. You know, two things for me. You know, I'll talk about when it goes wrong in my business, it's because people don't follow a system.
Yes.
So I'll give you a great example. We get to a stage, you know, luckily enough, we're quite good at getting sales. All right. So we tend to get, you know, a lot of sales, whether they're big volume or small volume, we get a lot of sales. But we were literally failing to deliver. This is not now, but some time ago, we were failing to deliver things quick enough or in the right way for the customer. It was always last minute. It was always a bit of a cluster. You know, it was always like people running around like headless chickens trying to make things work. And in reality, it's because what they were doing, let's just talk about my business, because I think it's important that we talk about, you know, proper examples rather than just talking about theory.
Yeah.
We would get an order, someone ring up and say, I need a new server and 4 new PCs. And we go, and they'll say, as a customer typically does, something that we've probably been thinking about for a long time, we've been quoting, we've been proposing, we've been going down to the customer, talking them about the thing. And then a customer will ring up and say, yeah, great, we've had the board meeting, Steve, I need a new server, give me 5 new PCs. When can you do it? And we'd say, yeah, no problem. When do you need it done? ASAP. A typical customer. As you say, I want it now. You've been talking about it for 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years to see the decision.
2 years, but now I want it yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is fine, which is great, which is the way it always happens. But then that's when your process and system should kick in. But what happens with us is my sales guys would say, yeah, no problem. I can fit it in next weekend. Great, we'll do it next weekend. So we've gone from the order to next weekend. They rung up and said to the guys, we need a PC, and we need 5 PCs, and we need a server. So the guys will go and order it. So there'd be no comprehension of, hang on a minute, first of all, what was quoted. Then we've already agreed an install date when we don't even know if the supplier's got the stuff in stock. So if the even at that stage, when you go to the supplier straight away and say, I need a server and five PCs, oh, that server's out of stock. All right, when's it coming in? 3 weeks. So now you've got to go back to the customer and disappoint them straight away by saying, actually, we can't do next weekend. It's going to be 4 weeks' time. Ah, but I want it now. So then you're jumping through hoops because you've already foobarred, really. Yeah. So we would literally get the order, do the install date at point of order, and then order the kit. But if the customer can't fit it in, even before, you know, we're already buying kit when we've got to pay for it in 30 days, but the customer's not going to pay us for 30 days until after we've installed it.
Yeah.
And we would have in instances of us buying kit, having to pay for it, and we haven't even installed it. So we could be waiting 90 days. We've already funded that kit. You know, so when we looked at the process, where it was falling down is nobody was following the process. You know, we come in and we always said our process or system was never give an install date at point of order. Never. So yeah, we've got to follow a certain process. The install date comes when you've checked with the manufacturer. You've then done the project sheet, worked on the quote, got the PO off the customer. There was a whole load of things that if you didn't keep on the manager's responsibility is to manage the process, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that people adhere to the process. And I always remember, you know, going on from that, I always remember Ian Stewart talking to us. Because Ian's a big processes and systems man. Yeah. Very much so, probably more than anybody on the faculty, actually. But he always says when things go wrong, people people are under pressure or feeling stress, it's because they've drifted away from a process. And remember what he said about that guy that was working for him, that was working 7 days a week, not spending any time with his family, and under a massive amount of stress, not hitting targets, missing deadlines. And when Ian went down to see him and said, you know, show me what you're doing, he had totally drifted away from the process.
Yeah.
And Ian said, you know, as soon as we drag him back into the process, everything worked again. So the systems and the processes are huge, aren't they, to follow?
Definitely, yeah. And you're right in what you said about managers are there to make sure the processes are adhered to. That's the orchestration part of Gerber's three-step process.
Yeah.
You know, it's all very well innovating and creating new ways of doing things, more efficient, more effective ways. But unless you orchestrate that afterwards, you know, I let's use an example from my own business. When we launched Risk Monitor, I learned a lot from some of the mistakes we'd made in previous businesses. And I wrote a step-by-step production process. And I built it in a CRM system called ACT. And this system stood us in good stead for about 3 years. We'd taken on three major contracts, HSBC Bank, Lloyds TSB, and a company called Land Securities Trillium, where they were responsible for every job centre and every Department of Work and Pensions building in the UK. So in all, we did about somewhere in the region of about 5,000 buildings in 3 years, maybe 6,000 actually. So the system easily coped with all the 6,000 jobs, and then I got, the business was growing massively. I spun out and I started to get involved in other things. And it was about a year later that we'd built our own piece of software called Ramis, the first iteration of it. And that was going really well. And I sat with the team this one day, and there was a major cock up in some of the planning, the jobs. And I asked them to take me through the process. Exactly the same thing had happened. They said, I asked them why they weren't planning the work in ACT. And they said, oh, we stopped using that a year ago. Crazy. But whose fault was that? I don't know who took the decision. I don't know ultimately who allowed it to happen on a day-to-day basis, but it was my company. So it's my responsibility. And although I was angry at the situation, and I was angry that we'd got to that situation because we failed to continue using the system that the business was built on, but the reality of it was, that was my responsibility. But to repeat your point, Steve, you're absolutely right. The business, any business, whatever you, I don't care what your business is, whether it's a two-man band, high street retail store, whether it's a street vending burger van, whether it's a, or it's a 100 staff solar panel installation company, doesn't matter. You need systems in your business.
Yeah. And Dave, I always use this. People say, well, you know, how do you know if it's right? I say, use the temp test. I call it the temp test. Yeah. Which is, if someone's going on holidays or maternity or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and long-term sick, and I said, get a temp and put them in that chair. If I can't hand them something that within 2 hours, they're not proficient enough to do what they need to do, it's not right. It's not, the system isn't right.
There isn't a system.
There is no system, exactly right.
Mm.
So get a temp to sit in that chair and say, the way we used to call it in the Navy, by the way, was Noddy's Guide.
Right.
Give them a Noddy's Guide and they should be able to do it. So any Noddy can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the temp test, I call it, because no one knows who Noddy is anymore, do they?
No.
I'm sitting with big ears. Noddy over here and big ears over there. funny enough, I think you're driving Noddy's car as well. But no, the temp test. Get the temp in there. If you can't hand them something that says, read that, and within 2 hours they can't be proficient enough to do the job, you've got no system in place.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, those are good things. But, you know, there's a couple of things we covered there. Start today, definitely. Start today. You don't have to be the person to write all the process and the systems. Get others to do it for you.
Yeah.
If practical, obviously. Tell, show, do. You know, so it's all well and good having a system or a process.
Yeah.
So for example, if you started today and it's only you, or it's only a couple of you, and then you start adding people to it, then obviously as you bring people in, you need to tell them, show them what to do and help them. I heard an interesting fact actually about when you're having growth, when you grow in a business, about your systems and processes. When you start your business on your own, and it's the law of 3 and 10. So basically, when you're on your own, you've got your own way of doing things, your own systems of doing it. And when you get to 3, whatever you were doing when you're on your own doesn't work anymore. You've got to rewrite the systems, rewrite the everything. You've got to make sure that it works. In other words, you've got to start again when you're at 3. Same thing happens when you get to 10. When you get to 10 employees, everything that you did when you were at 3 doesn't work anymore. You have to rewrite the book, rewrite the processes, rewrite the systems. Same thing at 30, same thing at 100. Same thing at 300, same thing at 1,000. You have to keep, and it's the law of 3 and 10. You have to keep breaking it every time you get to those points. So just because you're writing a system now and it's just ones and two of you, when you get to 3, you may need to tweak it.
Mm.
In other words, as you said right at the start, just because you wrote the system doesn't mean that it has to stay set in stone.
Yeah.
It has to be tweaked, and it tweaks along the lines of 3 and 10.
That's a great point. I mean, I've never heard about the 3 and 10, to be honest. But it stands to reason. I think it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That as your team changes, the dynamics of that team change, and they have to, by definition, they have to change as you grow. I did read once that no person should ever manage or lead a team greater than 7. Now, so I guess again that plays into the dynamics of as your business grows beyond multiples of 7, then you're going to need other structural systems.
Yeah, so that would mean that when you've got 7 staff, you've got 1 manager.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've got 14 staff, you've got 2 managers. You're going on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
If you've got 7 managers and you've got 1 person managing the 7 managers, yeah. So those are the laws of the not the laws,
yeah.
But as an organisation grows, you know, then you've got, so if you call them, I don't know, area managers, then when you've got seven area managers, then you've got a director looking after the seven area managers who are looking after the seven managers who are looking after the 49 staff.
Yes. Yeah.
Good maths, that was Dave.
It was. You did that really 49. Well. I didn't even see the steam coming out of you.
Woo! That's close.
So there's something else as well then. So that takes me to the what I would regard as the last step in that process is verification that those systems are working. You know, taking on board the mistake that I made is stepping away from controlling the business in the way that I was very early on for Risk Monitor, and assuming, you know, what is it they say?
I'll say it makes, assumption is the mother of all fuck ups. That's what they say.
Okay, well, I was just going to say that makes an ass of you and me.
Yeah.
But
you can blame Samuel L. Jackson for my bad mouth.
Let's not make the same mistakes again. And so, what we should be doing is measuring or putting in checks and balances to make sure that systems that we've put in place are actually being carried out. So, for every system that you create, put something in that can be measured, just a box that can be ticked. And then later on, you can check that once a month, once a week, once a quarter, once a year, whatever you decide. But either way, put something in place so that you can look back, look at that situation and say, is it being done in the way that I wanted it to be done? The comment that Ian made, you know, that guy had deviated from the systems and procedures that had been put in place. But in actual fact, the only reason they found out was because the guy was so stressed. Whereas if there was a checklist in place that somebody had the responsibility to keep up to date, then, you know, and that is a process in itself as well, isn't it? But once you've got that in place, then as somebody who's running that business, if you can weekly or monthly just say, I need my KPI sheet, and somebody hands you that KPI sheet, and you're looking at the way the numbers are moving or boxes that have been ticked, and if there's something, if you make the measurement tool so easy, whether it be a graph, a pie chart, something visual that you can instantly see there's a green arrow pointing in the up direction, positive, great, or there's a red arrow pointing in the down direction, of course either one of those can be the opposite as well, but something that gives you a visual instant representation of whether or not your systems and procedures are being followed, then that to me provides the 360 degree loop.
Yeah. That's interesting. I always try to break mine, always. So say we had, like I talked about our process here with the order, the install date and everything, so we got a set thing. And we always said that when we originally looked at that, so from point of order, we would never give an install date of before 10 days from point of order. In other words, we had to, in order to make sure we got all our ducks in line and followed our process, that would normally take us 10 days
right.
to get the kit in, build the kit, you know, make sure the supplier had it. So the earliest we could give, if a customer said to you, so we could tell the sales staff that if a customer was pressing you for an install date, you can say to them, look, I can't give you a date today, but it's not going to be any quicker than 10 days. Because we knew that's how long the process would take. What I'm always like, okay, so how do we make that 8 days? How do we make it 5 days? So how, and then how do we get the system so streamlined that we can actually do it within 24 hours? How can we use technology to make sure that the order comes in with a PO, with a thing, and everything else that then just flow, which literally clicks everything into action like a well-oiled machine, that actually we are able then to actually get a technician on site the following day and be installing if we wanted to. We never got to that, but that's what I like.
But what you just described there is the innovation stage.
Yeah.
So Gerber talks about innovation, qualification, orchestration.
Yeah.
that innovation is what you're describing there, is get your systems up and running first,
yeah,
so that you've got something to
yeah
follow, and you've got your temp test, as you called it.
Yeah.
But then the real growth in your business
yeah
is constantly reviewing, and in fact, encouraging your staff to say, you know, how many times have you heard this, Steve? Why did you do it that way? Well, that's the way we always do it.
Yeah.
So that doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
If you can challenge your staff, even when systems are in place, to follow the systems, but then always be thinking about how we can do this better.
Yeah.
Now, don't just do it better, deviate from the system, and don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Change the system to follow the innovative process you've just come up with. And that in itself then becomes another process, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So we have a process for becoming better in our processes. So encourage your staff to think about how we can do things more efficiently, more effectively, quicker, faster, better. But always do that in a systemic way so that they come back to a member of staff and say, hey, I think I've found a better way of doing this.
Mm.
Test it, measure it, quantify it, then rewrite the system, and then remeasure. And again, it's that virtuous cycle that continues to give you your virtuous cycle of the whole systemic way of running your business. But then what you've got, of course, is if you can make that work in a particular place, there is absolutely no reason why you can't pick the entire thing up, drop it down somewhere else. Different country, different town, depending on your business. Now what you've got is a perfectly replicatable franchise prototype. It doesn't need to
like
be
McDonald's.
A franchise. Yeah, that's exactly what happened with McDonald's.
Same and burger, whether you go to New York, Chicago, Landrissen.
Same experience, for sure. Not quite the same burger, though, I found. I've had the odd burger in different countries, and it's...
Oh.
Not quite the same.
Spoken like a connoisseur of burgers.
Yeah, yeah, not quite. But Spain, for example, it's not the same. You know, there's different meats, different. What you get is the same experience.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily get the same product. But that's not a problem either, is it? You know, as long as you're getting the same experience, you know what to expect. And in any walks of life or any business, what you want to be able to do is to scale and grow your business to a point where you can take it to another town, another country, another continent, and be able to grow your business in a cost-effective way, not having to start from scratch again.
Covered a lot of ground there, Dave.
I think we did there, Steve. Yeah.
Start the day, get out of this to write them, tell, show, do, manage the process, test and measure. Is that about right?
I think that's about right for me.
Happy days.
And call the whole process orchestration.
Orchestration.
Get your baton out. Okay. If you'll excuse the phrase.
Well, we can finish on that note.
Thanks again, Steve.
Cheers, mate.
See you soon. Living like a renegade, to renegade.
Thank you so much for taking your time to listen to the Renegades podcast. Being an entrepreneur is a lonely place, and all we want here at Renegades is for you to achieve the success that you want and to live the life that you deserve. Loads more information is available on the website, 729renegades.com. That's 729renegades.com. If you like the podcast, please like it, rate it, share it. Get in touch through the website and see you again next time. And I say, hey, hey, hey. Living like we're ready.